97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Back it is. Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. Hope everyone's having a great hump day. We are joined this segment by Jeff Mordock. He is the White House correspondent for the Washington Times. Jeff, great to talk with you again, my friend.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me back, Joe.
Hey, so Trump is back from Scotland, and he announced some pretty big tariff news with the EU, but he also announced some tariffs on India. What's the latest in the tariff game?
Well, there's a lot of tariff news today. It's one of the more proactive tariff days we've had from the president in a long time. In addition to slapping the new tariffs on India, he also just announced a little while ago that he's going to put a 50% tariff on all goods coming in from Brazil. And that's really interesting because it's part of his aggressive trade war, but it's also to send a message to the Brazilian government because he has complained about the unfair treatment of their previous president, who was on trial for contesting an election. That president was a close ally of President Trump's. And he's been very angry. So it's interesting because it underscores that Trump is not only using this as part of his trade campaign, but he's also willing to use tariffs to make a political statement. Another interesting thing is that the president today, as part of his trade war, closed loopholes on small goods being imported into the United States. That's goods less than $800 that typically, because of the low value, don't get tariffed. Now, that exemption has now been waived. So he's really ramping up this trade war ahead of his August 1st deadline with these nations to try to strike a trade deal.
And that is Friday, August 1st, Friday, yeah. When that deadline hits. Jeff, there was good economic news today. I mean, I know a lot of the mainstream media tried to avoid it, but is the White House talking about the good news that came out?
Yes, the White House is talking. I mean, they're really the gross domestic product has expanded. It's expanded well beyond what people thought. And that is great news because that was the key argument against the tariffs was, oh, it's going to limit gross domestic product. It's going to be it's going to really hamper development and economic growth. Economic growth, or the growth of the gross domestic product, was forecast at 2.3%. We hit 3%. That is a stunning number over the projections. I mean, usually projections come in at 2.3, and everybody's excited if they come in at 2.5 or 2.6. But to come in at 3 is just incredible. And it's interesting because despite this good economic news, the Federal Reserve, you know, clearly did not want to change interest rates, not even take them down a half a point. They still seem to fear that inflation we're not past the inflation. And I thought it was kind of interesting because I watched Jerome Powell's press conference today where he talked about how we're past the inflation of 2022 and all of that, but he doesn't seem to be confident that we're fully past it yet. And I think that is something that's not going to help the economy. I know the president has urged repeatedly for them to cut interest rates. He has asked for them to bring it down from 4.5 to 1. One's a little unrealistic, but I mean, even a full point or half a point, it's somewhat surprising. It's not surprising, but it's something that, you know, I think they could have done, and I don't think it would have hurt the economy too much.
You know, Jeff, we see this tension with the Fed and the president and Jerome Powell. I mean, what, if anything, can the president do? I mean, can he get rid of Jerome Powell? Is that in his power?
No, it is not. The Supreme Court has ruled that the president cannot get rid of a member of the Fed because it's an independent board unless there is malfeasance or wrongdoing that's uncovered. And that's why you see the president all of a sudden hammering Jerome Powell over the renovations to the Fed's headquarters. I don't know how much you've been following that, Joe, but it's really interesting. They've run, I think it's $7 million past budget, which they've blown past. And if you look at some of the plans of what the Federal Reserve wants to do, the White House has compared it to the Palace of Versailles, and they're not that far off. And all of a sudden, has Jerome Powell's become more resistant to rate change? We've seen the White House focus more and more on these renovations, and they're trying to make the argument that he's mismanaged these renovations. He's bungled them. He's lied to Congress about how much it was going to cost and what they're going to do. And they're trying to use these renovations as the tool to get rid of him. It'll be interesting to see how effective that is. That's why you saw last week President Trump went to the Fed headquarters and toured the renovations with Jerome Powell. Jerome Powell, you know, it's interesting. He's a Trump appointee from the first administration. I'm kind of fascinated by all the people from the first administration that Trump has soured on. I think that's kind of interesting. But, you know, his term, if they can't prove malfeasance or wrongdoing, his term is there until May of 2026.
Wow. Wow. Now, today and over the week, it's Wednesday, throughout the weekend and through the week, we've heard of Canada, France, the UK saying that they will recognize Palestine. Is the White House reacting to this? Canada's the latest to throw their name in there. Has the White House said anything about that?
No, they've been very mum about it. And what's interesting is the president, when he was in Scotland on Monday and met with UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer, who, as you mentioned, is a big proponent of this, of recognizing Palestine. President Trump was asked directly where he stood on that, and he didn't give an answer. He kind of dodged the question a little bit. I know how much, you know, he's clearly aiming for that peace prize. He clearly is trying to get peace in the region. And I think right now he's just trying to stay mum and try and figure out what is going to end this war. I thought it was interesting. It was one of the strongest breaks from Netanyahu we've seen, when the president also in that same press conference came out and disputed Netanyahu's claims that the starvation in Gaza is overblown or that they're fake pictures, and has really sought to downplay it. The president has strongly pushed back on that, to the point that the U.S. is going to set up food centers in Gaza to help bring bring food shipments into the people there.
Yeah, something we'll definitely have to keep an eye on. You know, Jeff, you were there for the previous administration, and before we went on the air today, Kamala Harris saying she's not going to run for governor in 26. I mean, Jeff, with everything we saw in the election, with, you know, how invisible she was in the previous administration until Joe Biden stepped down, can you imagine, is she really thinking about running for president again?
Well, that's what this move clearly signals, that she wants to keep all her attention on the White House in 2028. I mean, we'll see. I mean, right now it's the obvious names that will be in competition for her for the Democratic nomination. But, you know, 3 years is a long time in politics, so who knows? But this is somebody, look back, everybody, when they talk about her and her political future, focus on her performance in 2024. But I think what's more telling is to go back and look at her performance in the 2020 Democratic primary, where she crashed and burned before even winning a delegate. I mean, that campaign went nowhere. And I don't know why they think 2028 is going to be any different, because they keep trotting her out and the American people keep rejecting her at an incredible rate.
You know, I look at the Democrat Party, and like you said, I mean, all the signs of Kamala Harris, but I mean, this is a party, in my opinion, you're closer to it, you're there in D.C. I mean, this is a party that's really struggling to find an identity that's not just, if Trump says it, we're the 180 of it.
That's exactly right. What have you heard from the Democratic Party? And look at what the Democratic Party is paying all their attention to right now, which is Epstein. And, you know, there are certainly a lot of questions we need answered about Jeffrey Epstein. There's certainly a lot of confusing statements coming from the White House about Jeffrey Epstein, and all that needs to be gotten to the bottom of. But at the same time, are people still struggling with inflation or the economy, or that prices haven't gone down to the extent that they have? Are they sitting at home at their kitchen table worried about Jeffrey Epstein, who's been dead for 6 years? And that's all you hear from the Democrats all for the last 2 weeks has been Jeffrey Epstein, Jeffrey Epstein, Jeffrey Epstein.
Speaking of Jeffrey Epstein, do you think in the next month or so something will be released from the DOJ?
I think there has to be. I think there's too much pressure on them, and there's too much pressure from both sides as well as Trump supporters not to release something. The question is, what are they going to release that's going to satisfy people? They've released a lot of stuff. Most of it was stuff we've already known, stuff that's already been covered. They had that big event at the White House where Pam Bondi released Epstein files to a bunch of conservative podcasters, and there was nothing new in there. And you saw almost a mini revolt from those podcasters about the lack of new information. So the White House has to be very careful because they can't keep releasing stuff that we already know. They have to give something new. I don't know that anybody knows what there is that's new that they can give to help shed light on things. You know, the Justice Department has now gone to these federal courts to try and get the grand jury information released. One, it takes a really high bar for grand jury information to get released. And it's almost doing it because you knew a judge was going to block it, and then you can throw up your hands and say, well, we tried, you know, we couldn't meet the bar, what are we going to do? But on top of that, one of the things we have learned about the grand jury testimony is there's no victims who testified. There's no associates who testified. The testimony strictly from law enforcement, FBI agents, et cetera, talking about their investigations and what they did in those investigations. So I'm not entirely sure that we have anything new to learn from law enforcement. So we're going to have to get something more than that.
Jeff, quick here, because I'm up against the clock, but is there pressure on Pam Bondi? I mean, are there people in the administration that want Pam Bondi out?
Yes, there are. I mean, just look at the back and forth that's been going on between her and Dan Bongino. He took a day off of work in protest of his frustration with her. You know, Trump seems to be backing her. Trump seems to be constantly expressing support for her. But yes, there are people who are in this administration who are frustrated. And a lot of those people are making an argument, which is that people like Bondi, people like Dan Bongino, people like Cash Patel, the problem here isn't that they're covering things up. The problem's on the front. This is what the argument is. The problem's on the front end that they shot their mouths off without evidence, and now they have nothing to back up what they were saying. If that argument is true, I hope we eventually find out at some point. But that seems to be the argument for getting rid of her, that this constant overpromising and building things up only to have it deflated because they just don't have what this was built up to be.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Jeff, always great stuff. Appreciate you. We'll talk soon, all right?
I always enjoy it, Joe. Thank you so much.
That is Jeff Mordock. He is the White House correspondent for the Washington Times. And yeah, just quick note there. I have to say, I have nothing against Pam Bondi. I like, you know, a lot of the people in the administration. I do think there is some extra pressure on her or spotlight on her because it does sound like she overpromised, right? I mean, she said the stuff's on my desk. We're going to get it out. And she may have talked it up a little too much, but it's obviously something we'll keep an eye on. When we come back, more of Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. You know, I was going to talk about something completely different this segment, but something just came across my social media. Planning on the fly, Joe, this will either crash and burn or it'll make sense. Cynthia Nixon, we all know Cynthia Nixon. She ran for governor in New York. She was also on a popular HBO show back in the day. She said, I believe this was on some kind of podcast, quote, "My kid is trans. My sister's kids are trans. Every kid I know is trans and proud." Doesn't that sound like there's something? It's not normal for a whatever percentage of children to be trans. Again, hey, you're 18. You want to do what you want to do. I'm not going to sit here and judge. But I mean, we're talking about children. We're talking about kids being trans. I mean, that seems forced by the parents. You know, I mean, when I was five, you know, I mean, did I don't know. I was going to say, did I pick up a Barbie? I don't think I did. But if I did, were my parents going to, oh my gosh, he's playing with a Barbie. He must be a girl. I'm sorry. There is just something I cannot comprehend. That you have a child under the age of 18, right? I mean, when I was 13, you know, this was in the early 2000s, and, you know, men had pierced ears. I wanted to get my ears pierced. And my mom said, well, when you're 18, you can get your ears pierced. You can have a tattoo. Well, guess what? When I was 18, I'm so glad I didn't pierce my ears, which, by the way, I mean, they, you know, you could just not put anything in. And I didn't get any tattoos. But then you have parents out there that their kid says, you know what? I was born a boy. I think I'm a girl. And you start giving them medications and having irreversible surgeries. I mean, that is just, it should not, in my opinion, should not be allowed. And then when you're talking about multiple kids in your family are trans, doesn't that seem like maybe the parents are promoting this type of lifestyle? To me, this is, in my opinion, again, something that should not be allowed. Again, you're 18. You want to do whatever you want to do. Fine. That's not my job to comment. But when we're talking about children and their parents giving them medications that will alter, will have alterations and surgeries that are irreversible, that's inexcusable. And I cannot believe we're at a point in time where we have people bragging about how many trans kids they have. Again, within your family, what's going on with your family? What are you teaching these children? What are you telling these children? What are they watching? Because to me, that's just not normal. And, you know, you wouldn't let your 8-year-old get a tattoo. You probably shouldn't, you know, let your 8-year-old decide that they want to change genders and start giving them things like puberty blockers and surgeries. It's something that I cannot comprehend. And the fact that you not only have people like Cynthia Nixon, let's be honest, Cynthia Nixon, she's an actress. She's a Hollywood, you know, far left liberal. I mean, she ran to the very far left of Andrew Cuomo in New York. But when you have elected officials and they're saying things like, this is a sanctuary state where kids can come and have their gender affirming surgery. I'm sorry, you should never be allowed in office ever again. I mean, that is just, it's irresponsible by the parents and it's irresponsible by elected officials to encourage children not only to have the surgeries, but to have the surgeries without their parents' permission. Something that we've seen from California. And I just saw this come across my screen. And this is, liberals are saying, yes, look at this, trans the kids, yet get Sydney Sweeney off my TV and those gene ads. I mean, we're living in crazy times. Crazy times. And, you know, when I was growing up, every ad looked like the American Eagle Sydney Sweeney ad. Yet now, because of course, the American liberal needs something to complain about. They're not happy with themselves. So who's the person we're going to complain about? Sydney Sweeney. And crazy stuff like this. Clip 9. If we could play clip 9 real quick. This is what's going on over on TikTok.
Hey, American Eagle. Now do black and brown women. Because black and brown women also have great genes that they inherit from their parents. Did you know that?
Talking about blue genes and white people. Boycott American Eagle. Boycott the out of him.
A blonde-haired, blue-eyed white woman is talking about her good genes. Like, that is Nazi propaganda.
Oh my gosh. I mean, really? Really? Over a gene ad? I'm not surprised. I can't sit here and say I'm surprised because we have, and we all know it's the liberal stay at home mom, right? They're the ones, they have all day. They're in their late 30s, but they have all day to post political BS on TikTok, on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook. It's the same far left stay at home mom that Zoran Mamdani, you know, appeals to. Oh my gosh. I just, we can't even have ads for jeans anymore without people on the left losing their minds, like Cory Booker on the Senate floor. Again, if I sat here and said I'm surprised, I'd be lying because I haven't been in a coma for the last decade. We've seen this happening. Fortunately, even with what we just played, fortunately, I do believe that the tide has started to turn. It started in November, and I think it's continuing. I think people are sick of the woke stuff. And again, most people don't want to be offended by everything they see. So I do think the tide's turning, but it's still, the crazy is still out there. When we come back, we'll be talking about the positive economic news and Senator Josh Hawley wanting to send rebate checks, tariff rebate checks. That and more coming up next on 97.1 FM Talk. Jill Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. And we are joined by EJ Antoni, Heritage Foundation Chief Economist. Hey, EJ, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Yourself?
Hey, can't complain. And good news on the economy today. You know, you look at the Times, you look at CNN, and they're finding reasons to complain. But tell us the good news that we learned this morning.
Well, I would say they're trying to find reasons to complain, but they're going to come up empty-handed because we got some really, really good data today. You know, the GDP, or what we call gross domestic product, it's a way to try to measure just general economic activity across the whole country. And we got a great number. It was up 3% from the previous quarter. Again, really good number. If we look at the internals of the report, where is the economy actually growing? Unlike during the 4 years of Biden, where it was just month after month, quarter after quarter, and year after year of government hiring more workers and spending more money, we're seeing exactly the opposite right now. For the first 6 months of this year, government spending actually didn't increase at all. Government purchases were flat from the last quarter of last year until the second quarter of this year. So again, 6 months, no growth in government, phenomenal news. All of the increase we have had in economic activity this year has been from the productive private sector. That's fabulous. A complete turnaround from the previous 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that seems to be the Democrats. That's their idea of a good economy, is creating more government jobs for their friends, their buddies, and their buddies' families. I see it here firsthand in New York State. And I mean, like you said, we saw at the federal level, they think that if they can just create more government jobs and make more and more people dependent on the government, that that's good for the economy.
Exactly. And sure enough, like I said, we're seeing exactly the opposite of that right now. And it's not just today's GDP report. It's even been in the monthly job reports. And by the way, we're going to get the next one on Friday. That'll give us the month of July, those figures. And what I'm sure it's going to show is exactly what we saw for the first 6 months of the year, which was every month this year, the number of federal bureaucrats has actually declined. That's fabulous news. So again, you're seeing a reprivatization of the economy. You're not seeing simply money being wasted on the unproductive public sector, but instead you're seeing investment in the productive private sector. All of the net job growth this year, think of that, all of the net job growth is full-time jobs, it's non-government jobs, and it's Americans who are getting the jobs, not just just foreign-born workers who are flooding into the country.
And by the way, EJ is the chief economist. I'm sorry, I screwed up that. I don't know what I was thinking when we got back from break. EJ, you know, you look at these tariffs, and it seems now as the deadline's approaching, more and more deals are being made in what I view to be in America's favor. How do you view these tariffs? Are they good? Are they bad? And how will they play out?
Well, certainly the deals that we're getting are in America's favor. And you can call them deals, you can call them agreements, frameworks, whatever the case may be. But at the end of the day, the fact remains that President Trump is managing to negotiate a much better international trading system for the American people. Look at what's happened with the most recent one in the European Union. We are going to have unprecedented access. That's no exaggeration. Unprecedented access to European consumer markets. That will increase the demand for American exports and increase the demand for the American labor that produces those exports, whether it's food, whether it's cars, whether it's industrial products, consumer goods, you name it. And at the end of the day, that means not only more Americans employed, but it means faster wage growth for the Americans employed in those industries. And this is all possible because President Trump understands how to wield the American consumer's purchasing power like a weapon in these negotiations. That's what's going on with these tariffs. He's basically saying to these other nations, or in the case of the EU, a group of nations, if you're not going to give us the same courtesy that we give you, then guess what? We're not playing ball anymore. And there's good reason for that. You know, this is what President Trump has done here with the EU is nothing short of overturn an 80-year precedent. Ever since the end of World War II, we have allowed Europe to restrict our access to their consumer markets in order to help those countries rebuild after that devastating conflict. Well, guess what? That was 80 years ago. They don't need help anymore. If they can't stand on their own 2 feet after nearly a century, then maybe they don't deserve to stand at all as developed economies.
You know, EJ, you know, I look at this, and as you say, I mean, these deals, these agreements, they help the American worker, the American worker that wants to get out there and wants to work. Why did it take Donald Trump to get to this point that we're not being owned by some of these other countries worldwide?
That's a very, very good question. Maybe because it took a billionaire to do it. I mean, ironically, the guy who is the most independently wealthy president maybe that we've ever had after you adjust for things like inflation is the one who's most connected with the needs and the concerns of the average American, of the blue collar worker, right? Of the typical or the average Joe. He is not beholden to special interest. He is, unlike virtually all of the presidents that came before him, he is not beholden to a particular campaign contributor. Right. And this is Republican and Democrat, by the way. It was true for George W. Bush. It was true for Clinton. It was true for Obama, for Biden, for George H.W. Bush. I mean, you name it. All of those guys, they had their special interest groups that they always had to kowtow to. And that included a lot of international special interests. And that meant that their view on international trade was always going to be compromised and not necessarily going to be in America's best interest. And sure enough, that's what we got. For basically every decade, really, since the mid-80s, we have seen presidents not put America first. It has been America last more often than not.
EJ, Senator Josh Hawley from this great state of Missouri wants to see tariff rebate checks of around $600 for the American people to capitalize personally on the success of the tariffs. What do you think of his plan, and do you think we'll actually see these checks?
Well, I think the senator's heart is in the right place, but if I can be blunt, it's a really stupid idea. The government doesn't have any more money. I don't know where these different people, and it's not just the senator, it's tons of people in government, right? It's most of the folks in the Senate and the House, and it's across both parties. The federal government doesn't have any more money. We are $37 trillion in debt, for crying out loud. We're paying $1.2 trillion a year just in interest on that debt. We don't have any more money. If you're wondering why are we in a cost of living crisis? Why did we have the worst inflation in 40 years? Why did we have the fastest interest rate hikes in 40 years? It all came down to the government spending too much money and the manipulations of our monetary system that had to happen to accommodate that runaway spending. If the government has any extra revenue right now, they should be using it to reduce the deficit. And then once you get rid of the deficit, once you balance the budget, you use any excess revenue to pay down the debt. That has to be the priority, because if you don't do that, if you keep piling on new spending like this idea of giving out checks, then guess what? You're only making the problem worse. And the very thing that you're trying to alleviate, which is the American people's financial pain, you're going to, again, end up making that situation worse, not better.
Yeah, it's it, you know, you talk about the money brought in by the terrorists, but you're in so much debt, the national debt. It's like it's as if you overdrew your bank account and then you get your paycheck. Well, you don't see any money. It makes up for the money that you overdrew your bank account.
Right. Well, imagine, you know, imagine if your household is deeply in debt. You have, let's say, I mean, an astronomical amount of credit card debt. You've managed to rack up like $80,000, $90,000 or even $100,000 in credit card debt. You are drowning. You can't even afford the minimum payments each month. And so you're taking out new credit cards and doing cash advances in order to pay the bills coming in from the old credit cards. That's the situation the federal government is in. Okay. Now imagine you take on an extra job, you get a part-time gig on the weekends, and you're bringing in a little extra money, and you sit down with your spouse and you say, you know what? Why don't we take this extra money and go on a little vacation? Or why don't we have like a really nice fancy dinner at a steakhouse? Are you kidding me? You are drowning in debt. You don't have money for that. You need to be paying down debt. You need to be getting your financial house in order. It is not the time for more spending. And so, again, I understand, you know, with the senator, I understand the senator has good intentions here, but that doesn't mean his policy will have good effects.
Yeah, you know, and there's a lot I agree with Josh Hawley on in the Senate, but and he was, you know, one of the lone Republicans to call for a federal an increase of the federal minimum wage. And like you said, I think his heart's in a good place on both these things. But in the long run, I don't think it's what's great, what's best for the economy. How about you? What do you think about that minimum wage hike?
No, I think you're spot on there. And if you look at the states that have the higher minimum wage rates, sure enough, they're the ones with worse labor market figures, whether it's yep. overall jobs numbers or jobs numbers specifically in low wage positions or unemployment rates, including teenage unemployment rates. The data are very clear that this is what happens if you price certain people out of the labor market. And that's what you do with a high minimum wage. You tell an employer it is illegal for you to pay a low-skilled worker unless you're willing to pay them charity. That's a ridiculous position to be in. It doesn't help people. Instead, it causes more unemployment. And part of the reason why the state of Missouri has done better than a lot of other states the last 4 or 5 years in terms of its labor market is the fact that it doesn't have one of those onerously high minimum wages. It's not up there with like New York or Illinois or California or some of these other places. And if you want to export the ridiculous economic policies of those far left-wing areas to the broader country, then you will export the economic effects that go along with them. And again, that's nothing good.
EJ, great stuff. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
EJ Antoni of the Heritage Foundation. He is their chief economist. When we come back, we'll wrap it up. It's Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. Final segment, Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. You know, before we get to the clip of the day, real quick, on my Buffalo show this afternoon, I talked about a woman who proposed 43 times. I'm sorry, a woman didn't propose. I got that wrong. The guy proposed 43 times before the woman said yes.
Wow.
I mean, you know, is it just me? Am I not a romantic person, Sue? Because I probably wouldn't have even asked a second time.
43? Well, I mean, all right, if the first one's a bad situation, maybe you're out in public and there's something. 43? Wow. Wow.
Over 7 years.
That's, I guess that's impressive. I don't know.
It's determination. You know, I love my wife to death, but we had been dating over 2 years. If she hadn't said yes, you know, I'd be like, okay, we're on different pages. You know, I think it's time to pack my stuff up. I mean, I also did ask her in the middle of COVID, so maybe she kind of felt guilty and, you know, forced into saying yes.
No, she didn't. 43.
Jeez. 43 times. Finally said yes. They tied the knot in May, so she went through with the wedding. I don't know. I don't have that kind of... I love my wife, but if she said no the first time, it would have been really difficult for me to even pull the ring out again for a second time.
No kidding. Wow.
Well, with that, let's hit our clip of the day.
Stand by. Playback ready. Initiating sequence.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Yeah, this is something that I, let me tell you, I talk about this at least once a month up here in the beautiful state of New York. This is Chuck Schumer. And by the way, I have been on the air for 8 years in Buffalo. I've talked to zero U.S. senators from New York State. I've been on the air in St. Louis as a fill-in for 2 years and 3 months, as we figured out. And I've talked to one senator twice. I mean, but anyway, this is Chuck Schumer on the floor.
If you don't think they want to revert to Jim Crow, just look what they did in the SAVE Act, which went back to took Jim Crow for the whole nation. By so making it hard, they said you need ID, and they made it so hard to show ID that probably half the people in America couldn't vote. They don't want poor people to vote. They don't want people of color to vote. They don't want Democrats to vote. They don't believe in democracy. We do.
You know, I think it's pretty offensive to continue to go on this road that the Democrats have done, especially here in New York State, and I'm sure Democrats all around, to say that it's racist to ask for a voter, to ask for some type of voter ID. I actually think it's racist to assume that minorities don't have an ID. I think what Chuck Schumer is saying is racist, and I think it's small-minded. And I have said this before, someone called into a show on election night a few years ago, on a local election night, and said, you know, Joe, I don't have a car to get there. If I didn't have a car, you wouldn't take me to the poll because, you know, I'm not voting the same way. No, I feel the exact opposite. Like, you and I might not see eye to eye. If you needed a ride, I believe in everyone, every American citizen's right to vote, if you agree with me or not. And this is to make sure we have safe elections. And every time the Democrats don't like something, it's Jim Crow, it's racist. I mean, the buzzwords. And I find that to be offensive, and I think it's dangerous. It is dangerous. You've taken the weight out of those words. Those words should mean something. But every time you don't like something, it's racist. You're a Nazi. You're a fascist. It's Jim Crow. And we saw it again with Chuck Schumer. I'm all for voter ID. And you know what? If your state required voter ID, then yes, you should be able to get some type of non-driving ID for free so you could vote. But we need to have safe elections, and the buzzwords just aren't going to work. We'll be back here tomorrow starting at 3 o'clock. Thank you, Sue, Ethan, and Fred. Can't wait to talk to you again tomorrow at 3.
Get more at 971talk.com.